people turned their business profits into a lasting legacy that not only could take care of themselves, but also support their kids, their grandkids, and their grandkids' kids while doing what they love fires us up.
We only get one life, let's make it count. We recognize that with limited wealth, access to opportunities can be restricted. So we roll up our sleeves, launched a 100-year legacy movement.
This isn't about creating trust fund babies. It's about providing financial security through income-producing assets, sharing wisdoms, and instilling a mindset to empower them to navigate life's challenges and live the life they love.
Join our movement and get access to the free weekly newsletter so you can start, launch, and secure your very own 100-year legacy.
All you have to do is go to 100yearlegacy.com. Again, it's 100yearlegacy.com.
In this video, we'll dive deep into how we scale from zero to over $300 million in our multifamily business in just 6 years, and what our business looks like, and how we as active and passive investor make money so that you can take our playbook and grow your wealth through multifamily investing as well.
Hello, I'm Pommy.
And I'm Nancy.
Together we make the Kitty Sisters. We're apartment syndicators, entrepreneurs, and educators with big dreams and a $300 million multifamily apartment portfolio.
We're into helping successful entrepreneurs and founders who have a passion for real estate and $100K to $5 million to invest, all aiming to turn their business profits into a lasting legacy through income-producing asset investment.
This is Cashflow Multipliers, a podcast dedicated to your financial freedom and the lifestyle you deserve. Here's the story. We scaled from zero to 300 mil in just 6 years. So Pom is about to spill our secret, so you want to grab a pen and a paper. You don't want to miss this. It's all about who, not how. There's so many things that goes on into running a multifamily apartment, from acquisition to getting it under contract and to managing the asset. There's absolutely no way that the two of us could have done this on our own.
Nope.
It'd be completely ludicrous. The scale and scope is completely different than if you had like one single family rental. Right? And multifamily apartments by nature has a complexity because it has 300 plus units. In our case, we have multiple millions of dollars, in our case, almost $100 million worth of assets under management for that one particular property. So there's no way that the two of us all the way in Southern California could be getting that kind of job done.
We're not that genius, right?
If we were, we would have to split our bodies into like hundreds of clones, which makes no sense. Now, like even counting the numbers of vendors that actually goes into getting a deal done and operating it successfully, like I can count off the top of my head, like probably like 30 maybe. And that's vendors. That's not even counting actual employees in each of their firms. So there's hundreds of people that are involved in every transaction from the beginning to the end point. And so, yeah, absolutely. It's all about who, not how in this case.
You probably have heard of the 10,000 hours rule, which says you need 10,000 hours to master any skill. But honestly, how many 10,000 hours do you really have in this lifetime?
Another reason that we were able to scale so quickly is because we didn't straddle the fence. We didn't peek over to see what's on the other side. So number two is focus on the one thing and do it really, really well. As Gary Keller says in The One Thing, multitasking is neither efficient nor effective. Steve Jobs says that innovation is saying no to at least 1,000 different things.
Yeah, so like actually lately what we have been doing is actually writing like a list of no's, like because those no's are such a distraction to our impossible goal.
And number three is de-risking investments. Of course, investors are hearing all about how great any single deal is in the market. Anyone worth their salt are going to show and highlight what are great about their deals. But more important than that, in our opinion, is how do we de-risk the investment for the investors? Ultimately, everyone wants to safeguard their investment. Wealth preservation is always the number one key. You don't want to lose money, right? That's a loss aversion theory. And it goes to the heart and soul of any investment. So when we think about a deal, we not only focus on obviously the upside that has to be there, but we look at what are the potential downsides. We think of, hey, have there been enough due diligence on the structure of the buildings? Are the rent rolls, are the other information in the financials, are those accurate information? Like to our best of our abilities, whatever we can do in order to safeguard those issues, that's what we're going to do. Of course, we can never guarantee that there's no deals that are going to work perfectly because there are always things that comes up, but there are things that are definitely in our control, and that those things are the things that we need to make sure that we actually account for. There's going to be black swan events. We saw COVID, we saw interest rate hikes. Those are things that are outside of our control, but that's the beauty also, Nana, of working with an experienced team. We have the resources, we have the Rolodex, we have the experience to really navigate through those challenging times and figure out what's the best course. Because as they say that you have a plan until you get punched in the face. Yeah, you have a plan until you get punched in the face. And, you know, having been in this business for 6 years, we've definitely have gone through a few rounds in the box. Yeah, so Coming out on the other side means really de-risking the investment and really focusing on what's best for our investors and how to safeguard their money.
Warren Buffett's rule applied. Rule number one of investing is don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. What do people who are new or newer need to know when they start a multifamily apartment investing journey?
Yeah, we see this all the time. Complex system leads to complex solution. It's going to be a slower pathway to your end goal. Multifamily apartment, as we say all the time, is not an easy business. You have to work at it, but it's a simple business. Increase income, reduce expenses, operate the property properly, sell in a couple of years, and make beaucoup of money, right? But because like it's such a fundamental need, as long as human beings need a place to live, we're going to be able to have income on these properties.
Yes, AI can't replace.
I was about to say that. There's no way that AI can replace this as long as like physical human beings live on this planet. So to get started, as you're a new person, don't focus on learning all the aspects of the business. We already told you earlier, there's at least 30 vendors. You're not going to learn all those skills. What you need to do is focus on the right who. The right who are going to be the people who are like, think of it as you're doing like an apprenticeship. You're going to have more experienced people on the team who's going to guide you and going to tell you, hey, use this security attorney. Oh, avoid this due diligence person. Or if you have a problem with raising rents, what are some of the stuff they've done in the past creatively to increase rents? Those are all the stuff that an experienced partner or even a vendor can really help you out with. So be focusing on who and like looking for what they want, right? Don't think about, man, like I'm new. What role can I serve? Don't think about it just like what's in it for me. Always focus on
who, not how.
Yeah. And like, what can you do to serve them? Because anyone in this industry, there's always a need. There's always a pain point that you want to solve.
Yes. And multifamily is truly a team sport. And that's how, you know, we're able to scale.
Yeah. And because it's a team sport, everyone on the team accepts that there'll be new people coming in. And it's like any basketball team, there'll be a rookie coming in and that rookie year one may have like a couple points that they can score, but then after a couple years, they can be the star of the team. So it's always an abundance mindset in that aspect. So don't be afraid to go connect with people who have way more skills than you. And that'd be something that they're going to look for in those deals.
Actually, I heard someone said, if you're playing a basketball, go look for your LeBron James, right? Go look for that person who are professional, who are great. And then you want to bring value to them. Like ask them, what are they looking for you? Like what kind of value can you bring to them? Are they looking for someone who can source the deal? Are they looking for someone who has the balance sheet? Are they looking for someone who can asset manage, you know, do the day-to-day activities? Or are they someone who are looking for capital, who wants your help to bring more money to the deal?
Yeah. And on top of that, another really big thing is we say this all the time as well, go big now. I know it sounds like, hey, we went from zero to 300 million in 6 years, and that's like a really big number. But guys, once you understand this space, they're just zeros. And so when we first started, we bought a $6.9 million property, 76 units. I know that sounds like a big deal, but contextualize it in our space, that's a really small property. And then when we bought our $77 million property, like the work that we have to do on a small property probably actually is more than the big one. So if you're going to have to do the same amount of work or even more on a smaller asset, why not go bigger and make more profit in the meantime? Because in fact, like to be honest, when the $77 million property, when it comes to the day-to-day management, because it's such a well-run property, we have can afford like really good property management team to run the property. We actually do way less work than we did on that, you know, cost asset.
Yes. And we're not paying for the property management team ourselves. We actually have our apartment pays for them, right? So that's amazing. But again, we're not going to tell you guys, hey, if this is your first deal, don't just go do $77 million on your own. Go look for the people who are doing those kind of deals and see what kind of value you can bring to them. People often think too small and some never even get started. We used to feel the same way, believing we need millions of dollars to begin. But what we didn't realize is that there are plenty of people out there who are great at making money, and they're just looking for people like us to help grow their wealth.
In the first 2 years of our business, we experienced linear growth. We started from the $6.9 million multifamily apartment property in Phoenix, Arizona. And then year two, we thought we had a great momentum. And then, bam, COVID hit. And we were in the middle of a multifamily apartment deal that we were buying for $6.2 million. So we went from 76 units to 100 units, which is a linear growth. But that's what we thought we had to do, right? We didn't know any better at the time.
Did we ever think, even for a second, that we wouldn't be able to close on that deal?
To be honest, there's a lot of moments like that. Starting from the seller, because we had to renegotiate, obviously, the purchasing term because we got the deal under contract before COVID shut down. And then we had to negotiate the purchase and sale agreement while that was happening. I remember our broker calling, cussing us out because they're telling us the deal is still doing really well. Every single month as it was under contract, the property's performance continued to climb. While we were like, yeah, you can say that, but the news is saying that the world is shutting down. People are literally dying, right? And so there was a lot of fear and uncertainty in the market. Our co-GP, one of them, like about 5 or 6 days before the deal was supposed to close, for whatever reason, decided to back out of the deal. This was like 6 a.m. and it was through like a text message, like, hey guys, I'm out. And all of a sudden he's like crossed out all the name of his investor. And we're like, okay, had you given us like a month's worth, we would have just raised the difference. But like you're telling us with 7 days, and it was kind of like, ah. But you know what? I called him and like we talked him off the ledge and discussed like, okay, what are actually the things that were your concerns? Let's work through it. And I asked him point blank, like, if we solve this concern, would you be okay with staying in the deal? And he said, absolutely. So we did that. And that was an interesting moment. You know, like this was also, as you can call it, it was a loan assumption. So which means that we were taking over the seller's original loan. That process in commercial real estate takes a long time. And so that also was another reason that we were like, man, this is happening during COVID and we're doing a loan assumption. Ah, that was a lot.
And do you remember like on when we were having our investor webinar, like next week, like
The following week. So
oh my
God. Interesting thing is like, so we even teased because we sent out like a soft subscription. We said like, hey guys, like we have this property. Who's interested? Raise your hand. It's not like a formal binding commitment, but way more people committed their hand up, raised their hand and said, I want to be in this deal that we needed to raise. We even jokingly say,
we just have them do the subscription,
but like now we'll do the actual webinar. Obviously that's necessary. And then guess what happened? A week after that webinar, within 2 days, we had enough subs. We already oversubscribed. We already had our investor completed the form. But a week after that, all the counties start shutting down.
I don't remember. I was so shocked when like Los Angeles County, Orange County declared like a lockdown. And I was like, oh my God. And then our investor, they're so awesome, right?
That was so sad. That was like, here's the thing. Like today people are saying it's so hard to raise money. But guess what, guys? We raised money during COVID as things were shutting down, as people weren't even able to go to the bank. And so I mean to say like,
yes.
So I would say like, if you communicate clearly with your investors, make sure that they understand like the goal here is still their wealth preservation. And we told them really clearly, if the seller doesn't agree to our renegotiated terms, we're willing to walk away from the non-refundable deposit that we put in with them, which was in the six figures, which is a lot of money, right? We're willing to walk away from that if they don't agree to our terms because our investors' wealth preservation was key. In fact, a lot of investors were like, hey, PalmNet, I need the wire instruction. And we're like, hold off, don't send us any money because until we knew for certain that we're going to be able to get the terms that we needed, we didn't want them to just wire money and then we have to wire it back, right? So it was a real trust system. And we are so, so thankful that our investors never backed away. Even when we were talking internally, like, wow, when we have to go back,
and we actually have to tell them, hey, we told you guys during the webinar, you're going to get X return, but because of this situation, you're going to act like your return is actually lower. And you know what? For those people who stuck with us, who wired the fund,
100% right? Stuck with us.
Fast forward 20 months, what happened? We sold the property, right? And we were able to deliver hefty return for them.
Yeah. So thank you guys again for sticking with us. And that's just proof that like, if you understand the market, if you understand your investors, in any market, you'll be able to find that niche that where you're able to raise money. So don't let today's reality scare anyone off. We did it during COVID. I think that's probably the hardest time to raise money in. I'm sure there will be future challenges, but like it's possible to do this.
So let's talk about our business, what it looks like.
Yeah. So in our syndication structures, there's two groups of people that come together. Like without one, the other can't work in this deal. So there's the general partner. Those are people like us. And the passive investors, those are LPs in the deal. As general partners, our roles are acquiring the assets, sourcing the property, having those relationships with the brokers,
analyzing the deal.
Yeah, securing financing, obviously overseeing the asset management of the property, tracking all the KPIs on the property to make sure that it's performing at its peak. Every property obviously is unique, but we're always looking for when is the appropriate time to exit the property. And that happens probably on like a half year basis where we're looking at like, okay, what are the numbers? What does it look like? And you know, like frankly, for the LP side, like while we have like a hefty list of things to do, the LP side, basically their jobs are build a relationship with the type of people they want to invest with, know, like, and trust factor,
vet them
out, attend the webinar, sign off on the subscription doc and wire the money. So those are like,
oh, and you forgot, They just have to do a monthly reading, a monthly report, and just see if their money, you know, hit their account.
Yeah. So basically, like, that's for the distribution side. So there's not a lot for the LPs to do, while the general partners, but even before the deal gets under contract, there's so much that goes into play, and they're working extremely hard. If the deal is working smoothly, obviously there's less workload. In a situation where there's deals that are on, like, variable interest rates, like what we've seen in the past few years, there's a lot more work that goes into play. And that's really where you kind of, like, you pay for what you get, right? So you invest with the right team. They're going to be working hard every single day to get that done. I recently saw on a message board, and I think this is shocking. This was September, and they said, hey, what do I do if the GP went MIA and didn't issue us any K1s? And I was like, this is in September. This is recently. And I was like, wow, that is so scary. How can they be so negligent and not do the paperwork that's necessary? It's super scary to me. And basically, they were like, reach out to the IRS. I don't know how much else to do there. I've never even heard of that scenario. It's pretty scary. So yeah, lesson here is, this is not a commodity business. It's really a relationship business. And you have to really bet on the jockey versus the horse. Bet on the sponsorship team. You have to really gauge if they have your best interest at heart. If they do, the deals could be identical. The people who actually put effort, care into the deal, those are the deals that are going to do substantially better than the deals that are, like, people are negligent on it. And as far as the structure goes, every single property has a single purpose entity that is set up for that specific property. So that's kind of, like, the idea. There's typically three LLCs that are broken down. One is, like, the manager LLC, the GP or holds shares of that. Then there's another ownership LLC that has the GP and the LP, and then there's the property LLC that actually owns the building.
Our philosophy is simple. If we hit or really close to hitting that projected returns, we will exit to protect our investor from any black swan events like COVID-19 or sudden interest rate spike that could impact a property's performance. There are many ways to invest in multifamily syndication.
Yeah, so let me highlight three of the most common paths. The first one is by yourself as an individual or an LLC. So in this case, you're Mrs. or Mrs. Smith, and you're like, I love this building, and I have $5 million, $10 million, $100 million, and, like, let me just go out and buy it outright. In this case, you're going to operate the property yourself. You may have a team, but it's all on you. The second way is as an active person, a general partner, syndicator, operator, all those names means the same thing. They're us. So in this case, like, we are the people who pull all the resources together, the team, tool, money to manage the deal. You're going to be actively involved in acquisition, managing, executing the investment strategy, and then obviously exiting. Those are the components. So it's like from soup to nuts, like, we're responsible for the whole shebang. Finding the deal, putting it under contract, making sure that the finances, the capital stack makes sense, making sure the assets, signing on the loan, making sure that the assets performing up to the business plan or better. And then, hey, at the appropriate time, let's exit this deal and let's give our investor tons of money back. So that's the second way. The third way is to be a passive investor or a limited partner, aka LPs. So this is where you have your genius soul, maybe you're a doctor, a lawyer, a founder, you love your business, and you just know that, hey, my active income is great, but I also am thinking about generational wealth, and I don't have the time nor the inclination to go study multifamily apartments. I love real estate. I don't trust Wall Street, for example. And you're like, this is the tried and true pathway to wealth generation for millennia. As long as there's humans that are able to trade land, real estate is something that is profitable and will continue to be. So you put in the money with the right sponsorship team, you spend the time to do the due diligence, which basically means that you vet out the person you're going to be investing with. So you do your due diligence on the general partners. Like we talked earlier, really you focus on the jockey, not the horse. This involves doing due diligence, which is fancy language for just saying that, hey, you need to vet out the person to make sure that you know, like, and trust, and they're people that are of character that, like, what they say they've done, they've actually done. So in that case, like, a lot of the legwork is done before you even invest in a deal. After the deal closes, you pretty much sit back and enjoy your margarita on a beach. And then when it's time to come to do distributions, we'll send you an email saying, hey, just double check your bank account that's in our portal to make sure it's correct. And a couple weeks later, money's in the bank. And we rinse and repeat that process until we're ready to exit the properties, when we're going to email you another nice email and say, hey, we're ready to send you a lot of money. Let's double check and confirm that the account's still correct. And then that's it. The transaction's done. The beautiful thing is, $1 multiplies into $2, multiplies into $3, into $4, to $5 really quickly when you do passive investing. What happens is Once you have one lien open, you're passively investing in one apartment complex. As soon as you get that money back, for instance, let's say it doubled. Mm-hmm. You put in $100,000 and now it became $200,000. Now, guess what, guys? You don't have just one lien open. Now you have access to two liens running simultaneously. And that's where the compound effect really, really comes into play, because that $100,000 becomes $200,000 in, let's say, 5 years, right? Imagine if you put that $200,000 in a couple more deals, fast forward another 5 years. So now 10 years later, that 200 becomes 400. Let's do that again. Five more years. Year 15, 4 becomes 8. You get the picture, right? 8 becomes 16, 16 has become 32.
From this original seed of 100K.
And that's why we always compare investing to planting an apple tree. When you plant one seed, one apple seed, you get an entire tree. You don't get one apple. So the multiplying effect is really, really important. And that's really key to growing wealth when you're looking at an exponential scale versus something linear. One apple tree, it doesn't come from multiple apple seeds. It comes from one. And that's the idea that you need to focus on as an LP.
We love being passive investors. The idea of not having to be landlording, deal with tenants, toilet trash, and termites, or worrying about the liabilities and credit pools is just amazing. In fact, we started off as passive investors ourselves when we invested our first 100K. We got back $83,000 in K-1 paper loss. What's K-1 paper loss? K-1 paper loss is a designation by the IRS, not true value loss. We thought, okay, this is incredible. It's like the government is investing alongside us. They invest $83,000 and we only put in $17,000. Then we invest another 100K and got back a $62,000 plus in K-1 paper loss. And we just keep going like this for several deals. But then we ran out of money. Here's our backstory. We were in fashion industry, and when our biggest client closed down their retail stores, we lost about 90% of income overnight. And that's when we asked ourselves, how do we transition into being active investor, aka general partners, and use other people's monies to grow not only their wealth, but ours too? So how do active and passive investors make money?
So this is a really awesome question and something that comes up all the time. Let's go with a simple one, LPs. So LPs, limited partners, as we talked about earlier, what you do is you invest your money, for instance, $100,000. It's not always going to be the case, but let's assume that the deal projection, right? It's always a projection, no guarantees, is that that deal is going to double your money in 5 years. Okay, so 2x return when you're putting maybe at max 2-3 hours of work in 5 years, I think that's a really amazing return.
I mean, think about it. If you put 100K and in 5 years, it double, right? But technically, you didn't spend the 5 years to make that money.
Hours. So basically,
it's the fastest, it might be the fastest hourly wage you can get. So basically, you make like $33,000 per hour than you spend on the deal, which is amazing, right? And so again, multiple lane, that grows faster.
And the key is you get to go live your life. If you have a great active income, you're having an amazing business, there's no need to come and like shift gears because you're going to start at the bottom of the totem pole. In that case, you just set in and forget it and have these things just grow in the background for you. You wait a couple years and that money just grows exponentially. Now on the active side, and
which is like being lead general partners,
it's not a bad gig, right? Obviously, I think being a general partner, to be honest, is one of the most exponential growth things you can do. If you're not a tech founder, if you don't know how to code, or you don't have some magical being that you can sell to people or like something crazy like that, right? So as ordinary people, there's no other asset class that you can gross your net worth and your actual wealth faster than multifamily apartment as a general partner. That's our opinion.
Yes.
So some of the ways that a general partner makes money on a deal. So before I get into that, let me actually give you guys a little bit more in depth about how general partners, like what are our responsibilities? So the first thing is you have to understand that before you win a deal, you have to build years of relationship with the broker, have to really do the groundwork to understand the community that you're investing in. In any real estate transactions, block to block can make a big difference in the performance of the property. And so those time that you spend, like the hours in the dark, the hours in the quiet zone where there's no one that's around you to know that how much work you're putting in, those are the time that actually helps you become a better general partner. We have a good friend that before he won his first deal in Arlington, Texas, he literally mapped out the grid of the city and he went block by block and he noted apartment A has these amenities. These are the prices. Then he went to the next apartment and he wrote the same note. When he submitted his first offer, the seller asked, why should I award you this deal? And the broker said, let me show you something. He grabs a big board that has this grit. And he said, this guy studied this area. He would not fail you because he knows this area probably better than you do, because he already put in the legwork into it. So that was before he ever won a deal. And so, and that's before, right? Even us, we have our team, we have people and resources that we have to put into the market every single day to see what deal makes sense. On top of that, we also put in hard earnest money, which is basically a deposit that goes into a deal once we get it under contract. Some deals maybe
from day one.
Some deal can be maybe $300,000-$500,000. Some deal can be over $1 million. Hard meaning is non-refundable, meaning that even if the seller fudged their financials and we found out, we can lose that money. There's like basically almost, unless there's something massive, there's almost nothing that we can do to get that money back, even if it's the seller's fault. So there's a lot on the line even before we raise a penny, because we've never done this, but there's been people who raised maybe part of their money and couldn't close the deal. They end up having to send back their investors' money. So they lost their earnest deposit. I think like over $1 million, right?
Oh my God, no. So there's one, $1 million. There's another group, like $650,000. Another group, $800,000.
Yeah, so people who couldn't finish their deal for whatever reason.
Specifically for this, these cases are, they can't raise the capital.
So in that case, they couldn't raise the entire capital. So they had to lose $100,000+, whatever it is. The investors got their money back, right? So even before then, plus we signed on the loan, and now, yes, they say it's non-recourse loan, but there's our bad boy carves out and other things that make it so that it's very onerous on the person who signs on the loan. So it's a really big deal. A line of interest comes into play because no one wants to lose our investors' money, but we also don't, this is a business we want to be in for the long run. So we want to make sure that we protect ourselves and our business as well. So we're not going to get into anything risky.
Yes. And the beautiful side about being the general partner is pretty much just like an infinite return, right? So I'm like, when we go out and raise $38 million, we're not putting in $38 million of our own money, right?
Yeah. Or $3.8 million. Yeah. So the amazing thing here is that if you're a general partner, you put the deal together by using other people's money. But that also takes a complexity, and you have to build up those relationships. And so if the deal, like I said earlier, is running smoothly, then of course there isn't that much work. But no deal ever runs as planned. And so there's always stuff that comes up. That's when you really can see the worth of your general partnership team. Like, for instance, recently we negotiated a loan extension on one of our properties. It was touch and go probably since November. We've been talking to the lender since then. I have to report, like, basically we got what we requested. And to the surprise of our LPs, they were like, we just sent them an email letting them know. And they were complimenting, saying, wow, thank you for negotiating such an amazing deal. But even they don't know how much work went behind the scene, not only to make sure that the property performed up to a certain standard so that the lender could validate that, hey, this property is worth negotiating with. We worked weekends, 7 days a week for months, literally months, talking over numbers, talking over, hey, what are our plans? Talking to our property management team every single day until we felt like, yeah, we've turned the corner and it's performing exceptionally well. So those are the moments in silent. And then sometimes, Nan, you may agree, like, and I know that you've told me that we're guilty of this at times, like sometimes like we don't share enough of some of the things that we do behind the scene. Maybe it's because we take it for granted that people don't need to know about it or don't care about it. But I mean, there's stuff that happens, like a lot of stuff that happens behind the scene.
Yes, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of work that is done like underground. And then, you know, like a lot of people just see, oh, like the Kitty sister, they have $300 million and they think we're an overnight success. But actually, it was like a 6 year. It's a 6 years overnight success. Right. And we don't believe in hustle and grind, but we do work, you know, substantially to get the property, you know, in a well.
Yeah, if there's issues on a property, we put in whatever work that's necessary. Or if there's other properties that are performing well, then we're not going to have to do a lot of work, right? It's more about managing the team. So ultimately, being a general partner, like you said earlier, is not easy. There's work involved. You can leverage your team to make it so that it grows faster. But there's it's a simple business. It's much simpler than trying to like solve for world hungry
or like coding,
cancer, all that stuff, right? If you do this correctly, being a general partner can be life-changing. Being an LP can be life-changing. So real estate overall, multifamily apartments, just a great game that we love.
Now that we have reached $300 million in our multifamily portfolio, do you think your feelings will change when we hit that $1 billion?
Not really at all. I mean, like the responsibility would be more. There's more dollars on the line. But at the same time, we will be making more impact. in our investors' lives and the thing, and also our community as a whole. The other thing is, like, if once we hit that 1 billion asset under management mark, that means that we have a larger team. We have more responsibility to manage a larger group of people. And the one important thing that we need to maintain, and we've talked about this a lot, is like the culture within the business. It has to have that same feeling that people have when they feel like they can always reach us. They have access to our team, have that same open communication. So again, because for us, like, it's just zeros behind it. The one, like, there's just more zeros behind it. It's not going to change who we are. It's really going to be about just enhance our ability to have more impact on people's lives.
Yes. And just doing what we love at a larger scale. And that's it, right?
Yep.
The secret is that entrepreneurs and investors don't just chase after extra zero. We exist because we are crazy enough to solve other people's real problems. Real success isn't defined by the zero in your bank account, but by the freedom to be the pilot of your own life. And if that's what you want, the next video will teach you how to get rich without any hard work.
We can't wait to begin this journey with you. Check us out at thekittysisters.com/podcast.